Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Frontend Greatness Podcast. I'm AP, and today we will be talking about layouts and spacing. My guest today is Mark Delglish. Mark is an ex-meme lord, current dad jokester. He is the co-author of CSS Modules. He currently works at Seek building Playroom and frontends with the Braid design system. Hi, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Hey, AP, thanks for having me.
So, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's very late for me. I'm a bit tired. It's here in Melbourne, Australia, it's about 11 o'clock at night, so a little sleepy, but I'm happy.
Okay. Have you been drinking enough coffee?
No, I should have thought to have some before this. That's a good point. I've had plenty during the day, though. Actually, today is a day of four coffees, which is rare for me. It's not good. I need to cut down on that.
So I've heard you love coffee. So is it like the thing that, you know, keeps you alive during this season?
Yeah, one of the advantages of working from home is I get to choose my coffee and not just have whatever's at work. So I've been really getting into like the filter coffee, and I love the ritual of it, like pouring the water over the top and everything. I say that like it's something very unique about me. It's kind of, at this point, it's a bit overplayed, but I enjoy it. It brightens my morning.
Yeah, it's like a modern Western version of a tea ceremony. So, you know, that's quite unique, or at least very hipstery.
That's it.
Yeah. But today we'll be talking about layouts and spacing, which is a topic that I love. I think you might love it even more. I love the fact even more than you love the topic that I will be able to speak about this specific topic with you. And I think we should start off by introducing when you have a good layout and spacing system in place, or like the good layout and spacing philosophy when you build UIs, like how do you address spacing? How do you use grids and stuff like this? Like, what is the goal? Like, when you decide on how you should do it, what are the things that you should be, like, kind of the end result, like the layout and the spacing? Like, it's not something like, well, maybe you can like be a fan of that, but it's not the goal. The goal is to, you know, build great UIs, but that process involves a lot. So what would you say, like, how does a good layout and spacing system contribute to building great UIs, and what should you like it kind of be aiming for?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, in terms of really trying to ground it in what we're trying to achieve, for me, at the end of the day, these reusable component systems, they're all about being able to iterate quickly while being consistent. And to me, that's also in service of being able to design actually in the final medium as much as possible. So, you know, not doing as many mock-ups, actually iterating on the product itself. And the way I think, so I would say one of the things that really slows that process down is working at too low of a level. So if we're talking about layout, like we're talking about CSS, really, it's like, to me, what a layout component system does is it means that you can rearrange the content on the screen quickly without touching CSS. Because I always found that's where it ground to a halt before. Like, I had a design system that would have all the usual things, buttons and form fields and so on. But when it came to actually assembling a page out of them, it didn't feel like you were using a design system. You were just having a low level, right, bunch of CSS. And to me, a layout component is trying to bring the benefits of a design system that you have with things like buttons and form fields and so on, but bring it to the layout of the entire page, but in a composable way, not these sort of pre-canned layouts, but layouts that you can recompose into almost anything that you would typically lay out on a page.
Yeah, that's like a really like a tangible goal. Like, I feel that like some very like practical examples on or like something like when you like in when we have designs, the designers don't always get everything right. Like, there might be a gap that is like 13 pixels. And if you don't have any agreements between on what spacing might be, then you might have to ask, like, is this 13 pixels intentional? But rather, if you have agreed on stuff, you can like just go, okay, it's probably one pixel in the wrong direction, especially if you have like a really good design system where, you know, you can compose components and have predictable space between them. So that's a really valuable thing, that it, like, the back and forth between, even if you wouldn't be designing in the final medium, which is like, that would be like a dream come true for me, but like, it's not possible everywhere. Even without that, you get this benefit of, we have agreements on some things. And then I feel that also being able to communicate intent. So instead of saying that there's like, you know, with CSS, you can say that there's a padding of 12 pixels, but it doesn't tell you, you know, what's the goal. So having components that, like a stack component that tells that this is a stack. So the intent of the designer and the developer who has been doing the layout has been that these components have the same space between them. So that's the intent. So it's easier to understand kind of how the layout is structured from code rather than trying to, you know, see these little details.
And I think that makes it easier to teach non-developers as well, which is, I found useful. Like if I'm trying to get designers to understand how the system works and maybe even start to do some light prototyping with it, I can see myself able to teach. I find that I'm able to teach them when I've got these high-level layout components. Whereas if I was trying to teach them low-level CSS, it'd be a lot harder. Not least because, like, now they have to do a bunch of plumbing as well. Like, they've got to write these CSS rules, but they've got to attach them to an element somehow. So whereas like a component is very much just like, you just sit, like you said, I just want a stack, done. I haven't had to create a div and give it, you know, set its display to flex and set its flex direction to column and set it, you know, like all these steps I have to go through and I have to assign those styles to the element. Like in the CSS and JS world, maybe best case you've got a CSS prop in line, but even then, you know, like it's very cryptic what I'm writing to a non-developer. Like I'm writing div CSS equals bunch of syntax that I don't really, you know, that person would just not understand what's going on. But with components, you know, we get to use high-level language that's it's in a syntax that's easy for non-developers to learn and read and maybe even write themselves.
Yeah, so it's not only kind of about developer productivity. It's more like also about the overall productivity of the team and the organization, like being able to work together and build something that is consistently good and is consistent across maybe like at least multiple views. If you have multiple apps, it gets like the benefits grow even larger and stuff like that. Okay, that's awesome. So that's the goal. And I would, in order to kind of get into what it, you know, entails, what do you need to get to this goal? I have a list of so-called best practices. And your job as today's expert guest is to tell our listeners whether or not something is a best practice, and then more importantly, discuss why. Why do you think it is, yes or no? So the first best practice or not is that you should use a 4x4 pixel base grid. Yes or no?
This is an interesting one. I think I would have said yes a while ago, and I might have changed my mind. I think we might get to this later, but I think the need for a grid goes away if you, or at least is greatly diminished if you trim the white space away from your text nodes, and you let because like, so when we were really fanatical about our grids, it was about having the text sit on baseline and being able to get consistent space between things, including text, by making sure that the text was sitting on that baseline grid. But now in our system, we remove the white space above capital letters and below the baseline of text, which means that, and interestingly, that when you remove that space, the actual glyphs themselves are not on a 4-pixel grid. So like your text is already off grid just by trimming that space, right? There are tricks to get the text back onto the grid, but you start to think, well, hang on, what's actually the value in doing that? The main goal, if we step back, right, like the main goal is that your UIs look good. Like that's the goal. For some products, being religiously on grid is useful. But I would say that those sorts of products, in my experience, are quite rare. Like we've sort of dropped adhering to the grid like we used to in Braid, and no one even noticed. And the products arguably look better because of it to me. So I think it depends, but
probably not. But I think I understand where you're going to. And I would say that it's really, really hard. Like, just to clarify what we're talking about is that if you would put a 4x4 pixel grid on top of the whole page and starting from the top, going to the very bottom, everything on the page sits on that grid, and every letters, capital letters like H, they need to be like at the bottom of that. And like you're trying to build layouts where every component is like the height is divisible by 4. And or by 8, it depends on like where you're coming from. So, and my experience also is that it is very, very like it's expensive to the company, and it might not pay dividends. Like for most companies, like the consistency in the sense that it's great to have a good looking UI that is consistent is better. And it might be that the 4x4 pixel is not where you go. I think that 4x4 pixel was originally kind of popularized by Material UI, and that's where kind of this trend came from. But I'm pretty happy to hear that you think that we can build great UIs even without trying to achieve that. The second best practice is that you should have a spacing scale that is a multiple of your base unit. So whatever base unit you choose for pixels is common, that you should have one. Should you have a spacing scale that is a multiple of some base unit? Yes or no?
I would say yes. I mean, even though I was saying we're not as big on the grid anymore, like I guess to your point, what I'm referring to is the entire page itself is sitting on a grid, like you could overlay the whole thing. When it comes to a space scale, I think first and foremost for me, the benefit of having that that space scale that's a multiple of the grid is it looks harmonious, right? Like when you lay out the sizes together, it just looks correct rather than just random, sizes. And it also just means it makes it faster for you to pick values as well. So it just makes sense to me.
So you don't need to think about, should this be like 4, 5, or 6 pixels? You can choose whatever is the closest one on your scale. And I also feel that it makes it faster for you to like bring designs to life, because I work mostly in the world where designs are still made by designers and the handoff is done through Zeppelin. So you do need to inspect stuff and the spacings are not 100% correct all the time. So it makes it a lot easier if you can, like, when you get familiar with your spacing system, you can just look at, okay, that's probably an 8. And just go with it instead of always inspecting stuff. And at some point, like things also come quite obvious that you can almost like guess the space. Regarding the spacing scale, so you could have a scale that goes like 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24. The next best practice is about what value should your spacing scale have? So the best practice is that the larger the spacing values go, the larger the differences between them should be. So you shouldn't go like with 4, 8, 12 to all the way to 86, 90, and, you know, 100. But you should, like, the larger values should have a bigger difference between them. Yes or no?
This one's tricky. I guess I would say the basic answer to it is yes. Like, it makes sense. Because once you're up at, you know, 96 pixels or whatever, like, you're not saying, should it be 96 or should it be 92? Mm. Like, you're really, there's not enough difference between them that you might as well just stick to like, it wouldn't be a problem to you if there was a predefined value. One thing that I have found is kind of tricky, though, is that as at that sort of low to mid end of the scale, you feel tempted to start making bigger jumps, but then there are times where you feel the lack of some of those in-between numbers that you've left out of your scale. I know I've felt that. Mm. So,
I just
like a good a practical example is if you go from, you know, 12 to 16, to 12 to 16 to 20, you might be tempted to go from 16 to 24 or something, because that just feels like, oh, it's about time I make an extra step in here. Mm. So it starts to ramp up. But then those values that you leave out, sometimes you feel like, okay, there's not the right value in my scale for what I'm trying to do right now. So
I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Tricky one. And actually, like when Tailwind 2.0 came out, one of the biggest things that I noticed was that they added a lot of values to their scale. Like, if you go to Tailwind's documentation and look at the spacing, it still is like an exponential curve. But they have added like values like, I think, 1.5. So at the bottom of the scale, you don't even like follow the grid of 4 pixels, but like, or the base value. And then I think there are a lot of, like, it takes a lot more time for the spacing scale to kind of go to these bigger jumps. So I think it's a good example of, you know, maybe not following things religiously, like trying to find some mathematical model, but taking these things from how you actually build UIs is valuable. So good. So you that in principle it is so, but you should make sure that you have, like, you don't go all in too fast, and especially at the lower end, you should probably have some wiggle room. Then there is a good one. So a best practice or not, you should not use margins for spacing.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think this is at the heart of how we think about layout, which is that components should, I forget who said it, apologies, but someone on Twitter had summed it up really well. She said that a margin on a component is like a side effect, because, you know, like, a component shouldn't be affecting things around it. It shouldn't be, you know, if a component wants space inside of it, it can have some padding. But if it has margin, it's like it's impacting the world around it in the layout, and it shouldn't be doing that. So, like, if it wants space above it, like, it's actually, you're thinking about it wrong. Like, the component shouldn't be trying to put space above it. Its parent should be providing space between it and its sibling.
Okay,
that's really the crux of it.
Okay, so that actually answered already the next best practice, which would have been the component should not define their surrounding space. But if the component, like, just to go back to the margin a bit, because Max Stoiber, for example, has a blog post that is like titled that margins should be banned or something. I can link it in the show notes. And he's of the opinion that you should never use margin for any sort of spacing in the app.
Yeah, so, like, saying you shouldn't use margin is a nice pithy, like, little tweet size, you know, piece of advice. I think the truth of it is, if we use the analogy of it being a side effect, right? Mm. Local side effects are fine. I'm thinking of mutation. Like, it's like having local mutation, right? Like, if you've got a pure function that inside of it mutates a variable, but then at the end of the day, like, ultimately it's a pure function, then it's like conceptually everything's fine in your system. Because that mutation didn't leak outside of it, of the bounds of that pure function. I think it's the same with layout. Like if inside the bounds of a component that doesn't impact its surrounding space, you happen to use a margin, then whatever. Like it doesn't actually matter. But it's more about saying. I guess the point is more like the root node of a component shouldn't have a margin. I guess is really the key thing. Like. Yeah. If I drop an element on the screen, it shouldn't also push things under it down. Like it's not its job to own that.
Yeah, I think the one way you'd agree using margin is minus margins, because that's used a lot in the braid design system. So if you have padding and like in some components, you remove it by using this good old hack.
Just quickly, I did look up who said margin is like side effect, and it's Jane Manchun Wong. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. But yeah, she said that in response to Max's tweet, and I think about that tweet all the time.
Yeah, awesome. And we'll add it to the show notes too. So the next best practice related to spacing and layouts is that using values from your spacing scale should be easier than setting one-off pixel values.
I don't know if that's necessarily a goal per se. I think that's just what happens as a side effect of building the system, like that you make. I'm sort of thinking on the fly on this one. I mean, I guess so. Yeah, I guess it's true that part of the goal of a system is to make the right thing easier than the wrong thing. And so, like in our system, if you want to, you can go and build custom things and use the low level, design tokens to build whatever you want. But it takes considerably more effort than just using the built-in stuff or using our box component. I guess it's in space is part of that story as well. If you want to put a padding value on an element that's like 3 pixels, right? Like just out of the air, that takes more effort. And I guess that is a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, this is something that I thought about quite a bit when I was embarking to my last design system journey, because when we were like kind of choosing between technologies, do we do our design system ourselves, or how do we do it? And there are quite a few design systems that don't actually have layout components, or they don't have a ready-made way for you to build layouts. Apart from maybe some, sidebar layout component stuff. And like if you'd be in the situation where you kind of, for example, with styled components or any way where you would author CSS yourself, and then you would put in like values to the CSS, like you with styled components, you need to have an inline function that takes your theme, and then you need to know that it's theme, space, whatever. With sauce or less, you need to know that there is a variable called something, or maybe you have a function or a mixin or something that you need to use. And a person who is not familiar, like 100% with how things are done, they need to have the information. They need to, they need to remember to do it. They need to buy into the philosophy. So like this was one goal that I had, like how do I make sure that whatever like decision we make, it is like that the developers like almost automatically opt in to the like values that we've kind of decided that we'll be using. And also there's stuff like TypeScript, for example, like that you need to have good autocomplete, even if you have these components. Like, so that's interesting. So the next best practice, or maybe, is that you should, you need a grid with columns and rows. So this is like going back to Bootstrap. So Bootstrap made it very popular to have a grid of 12 or 24 columns. So what's your take on how useful that is? Should we have one? Yes or no?
I feel like that way of building websites just almost never clicked with me. I don't know if I missed something back in the day, but I mean, now, especially with responsive design, I think much more in percentages and just saying, I want a column that's, you know, a third, whatever that, you know, whatever the screen size is, I want it to be a third. And that might change responsively, but, yeah, I think, to me, it's in a similar camp to the, you know, trying to strictly adhere to a grid across the entire page. And I think that, like, columns, you know, 12 column grids and so on, like, to me, it feels a little bit like we're pulling in some of these patterns from print that made sense with those constraints into a much more flexible domain where it doesn't make as much sense. That's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, I think one big like change between like Bootstrap 3, which was the most popular CSS framework probably in the world ever. Like, I don't know if there is ever going to be a successor with the same amount of popularity, is that you didn't have Flexbox. And so like building these grids was, you know, like building layouts where you have sidebars and stuff like that was actually not as easy as it is now. And I do agree with you on in the sense that it does not properly reflect the way maybe you build UIs, in the sense like even Adam Wedden and Steve Sugar in the book Refactoring UI, they have a chapter called Grids Are Overrated, and the argument there is that a lot of the time, you might not want things to scale indefinitely. Like, there are a lot of like layouts where you just want to have a sidebar, and it makes sense to have that like 250 pixels on every screen and use the rest of the real estate to the main layout. Or then, like, if it's a percentage width, then you probably collapse it. But yeah. Like, I think that's something that, like, at least I took from Bootstrap, and it was hard for me to, like, it didn't make sense anymore. Like, it's something, like, I noticed that when I was building the last UI, like, the current application that I'm building, like, we do have a grid. Like, we do have a 12-column grid, but I didn't have to use it anywhere. It just didn't come up when I had other options. So that's interesting. Then we've talked about a lot about this sort of, you know, you have a component that is a you know, handles space for you in a way or another. But I think it's like worthwhile to kind of discuss what sort of spacing components you should have. So the next best practice is that you need a spacer component. Yes or no?
So yeah, this is a really good one, because we've actually debated this a lot at Seek when we were working on our layout components at the start. I would say I started off very much in favor of having a spacer component. So my argument in favor of it, well, to answer your question, first of all, I think you probably should try to avoid having a spacer component, but I changed my mind on this, so I'll explain a bit. I initially, my argument for a spacer component was, you know, when we're building a component system, we're trying to match the way designers think and operate and iterate on their designs. And I was saying, my argument was basically that designers put space into a design, like as if it's a physical thing. Like, I've got two elements on the screen, I want to put some space between them, and I'm going to choose how big that space is. It's not that, like, as opposed to, say, pointing at the first element and saying that element has a bottom margin. Like, that's not how they think about it, right? Like, they don't attach space to one of the siblings. They put space between the two siblings, right? So it's like a first class thing in the layout, in the component system. And I think that made perfect sense. Like, I think that is a good argument for why it should exist. The pushback on it was that, well, hang on, like, the problem with space being a component is often what will happen is you'll have a collection of things. You want space between every one of them. You got to keep that space consistent, but you've also got to make sure you don't put space above the first item, you know, as you map over some items or whatever. And the realization was, and you also want all of those space nodes to be consistent for a given set, right? If you want to have different amounts of space, then like from a visual design standpoint, you actually have a different set of items. Like, so you might have a stack within a stack, right? So what, like a, the nested stack has small space and the outer stack has large space, right? The spacer component doesn't give you that structure. It lets you just sort of throw white space around without really understanding the relationships of those, of that space between all the elements. And so not having a spacer is actually, I find, a really nice constraint, because it forces you to actually map the relationships of, like, well, you want some space between elements, like which elements are in the set, because that set should have consistent space. I think where maybe sometimes even with that viewpoint, you find yourself saying, I get all that, but I wish I had a spacer right now, is when you know you've just got two things and you just want to put a small space between them, or large space, or whatever it is. And you know that's all you're ever going to have. It's not a collection. It's not going to grow. I just want to put some space and move on. But instead, you have to back out, wrap it in a stack, open, close. You know, that's maybe where you still feel the you feel like you'd like a space component. But I think not having it in your system forces your consumers to get used to a better way of working, which ultimately is a better system, I think. So I was convinced that you're better off without it.
Yeah. We actually started with a spacer component, like, and then quite soon realized that it's not like I don't like the fact that, like, in the code you're adding like additional like lines for every space. Like, it gives you almost a double amount of code, which results in larger components, and you start feeling like you should be extracting something, when in reality, like, the complexity of the component might not be, you know, very high, but you just have a lot of noise. Also, I think, like, we had also, like, we used the spacer component for vertical space. So if you'd have like two items, you would have a input spacer, a box. And I think that actually has a wrapping problem. So when you make the screen smaller, first the button goes to the second line, and then the spacer, like, we had spacers with padding, so the padding would go to the second line, so the button wouldn't be on the left side of the UI. So you have this sort of, from my perspective, very unnecessary problems easily. So the next best practice would be then that you should have a box component. You at least have one in RAID.
Yeah, so this one I might generalize to, you want to have some kind of system that lets you write CSS in a semantic way. So, because that's in effect, that's what a box component does for us. Like, so for example, I can go box, like, box shadow equals small or large. Right. Like, so I'm saying that so we have a palette of box shadows, right? Hmm. Like, you talked about it before. If you're writing, you know, if you go back into the world of SAS or whatever, right? Like, I would have to write some CSS that says box shadow is, and then use some variable, but I could equally choose not to use a variable. I could write whatever I want. Having a box component means that for us, it means that, okay, it feels, it has the ergonomics of CSS. It has all these properties that are CSS properties, basically, because it's a one-to-one mapping of to an element. So, you know, at the lowest level, but we surface a lot of values as, you know, as their semantic names from the tokens. And so it means that, I mean, what's the point of that, right? Like the point is that you can move really fast because you're not constructing a style sheet that happens to use variables. Like you're almost, it's almost like one step above in terms of abstraction. It's like one step above CSS, which is like, I'm using a subset of, it's like, it's like using Tailwind. If we use another example, it's like utility first, right? It's like saying I have a bunch of tokens, you know, that have been pre-mapped to some API and I'm using that API for my styling rather than writing style sheets where anything goes. I'm so you can, like, you could take Tailwind and put it into a box API. Like it's really about saying you should work. So maybe that's the point. You should work with utility styles as much as possible and avoid dropping down into like, so that you should work in the component layer as much as you can. And that if you have to write style, custom styles, you should do that ideally at like a utility level that is, you're trying to steer you towards common values and not just writing whatever you want.
I understand. And that's my experience with like, because I've been implementing some of like many of the layout components from Braid, like from scratch with styled components. And like originally I had a lot of custom styles and I had a lot of spacers, and then I had the box component with padding, which I still do because of reasons. But the more and more I've got like gone into the direction of like having these primitives in place, the less sharp knives I use. And I think one of the objections to having this sort of an abstraction to CSS is that programmers, developers, often they're like, leaky abstraction is a really bad thing. But I think the point that you really need to make and understand is that, like, you're not trying to abstract CSS. That's not the goal. You're not trying to have a kind of a better version of CSS, but you're trying to find the CSS attributes that you need in your application and have a very constrained set of what you can use. For example, a Braid's box component has like flex, shrink, 0 and 1 and nothing else, because those are the only values you need to build layouts 99.9% of the time. So what you're doing with this sort of an abstraction is that you're directing people to writing things with the same tools. Because like if you take a lot of layouts in CSS, like a sidebar layout, you can do it with floats, you can do it with grid, you can do it with flexbox, you can probably do it with absolute positioning stuff. You have a lot of ways you can achieve the same thing. But by having a subset of CSS, you introduce constraints that kind of direct people to the same direction, which makes it easier to understand other people's code. And so that's like my take on the box component, why I've learned to enjoy it.
I like the process of, I mean, in our sense, it feels like we are effectively rolling our own utility, like CSS utility collection, right? And like you said, we try to use that first. And what's really nice is that in our system, like every once in a while, what will happen is we'll start to feel like, you know, so every once in a while, I would have to go and write a style sheet for something because it's not covered. Like you talked about, you know, flex grow of like 0 and 1, right? Like that might be an example of something that it became so rare for us to have to go and write a CSS file that it would stand out to you that, okay, I'm having to do it. Why am I having to do this? I'm having to write flex grow 0. right? Mm. So what you would do is you would then search the code base for where have I used this property in enough places? And if we realize like, if it's only used in one component, we'll leave it as it's, you know, okay, that's happy for that not to be part of our collection of utilities. But once it crossed that threshold where it's like, you know what, like a quarter of the components are reaching for this thing, let's pull it into box. So we did that quite a lot. And so what's nice is it lets us be really deliberate about like, because all of the CSS on box gets sent to every consumer of the site. Our CSS is all static, generated at build time, even though we write it in TypeScript using a library called Treat. But you know, it ultimately like it has effectively no runtime, and so box is our way of trying to limit the amount of CSS we statically build ahead of time and ship to users. And so it's nice for us to force ourselves to be utility first for that reason, like try to cut down the amount of CSS we're sending to people, like you said. Don't solve the same problem in eight different ways. Like try and reuse that same core set of styles. I mean, components get you a long way towards that anyway. Like if you've got layout components, you know, like you'll reach for those instead of CSS, but, even those layout components can themselves solve the same problem in different ways. Even Braid, does this, with a couple of things that I've since fixed, but haven't released, but, yeah, we'd solved like, having different widths for elements. We used flex basis in one component and we used width in another one, but we could have solved it all with width. Like we didn't need to use flex basis. So having the box component as almost that, like it encourages you to reuse existing styles. And it also encourages you to think about like, do you actually need these new styles? And if so, should you pull them into the core set? It gives you that framing for that conversation.
So you're basically what you should be doing, like code at all, like you're trying to abstract the things that are worth abstracting. So when you make the third thing of the same thing, but you're doing it with CSS, like that's awesome. Like I've never thought about it that way, but you know, that's awesome. That's like you're bringing your team together to make the same thing with CSS that you're already trying to do with, you know, JavaScript.